the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners, as well as public radio listeners and future YouTube listeners. My name is Jerome, and I am the sane environmentalist. I am recovering from a huge coughing fit, so please be patient. Today on the show, I wanted to talk with my co-host and founder of this show, Lonnie Clark, a fellow activist and future neighbor. And I wanted to talk about, you know, the value of our work, of activism, of the some of the shortfalls that we get with activism and some of the issues that we come up against as activists that can cause many an activist to stop being active. Some of the biggest ones, Claudia yesterday in her little bit that she did on my show, she went over those. The haters, you get over that. But there's a lot out there. And a lot of negativity and a lot of pushback. And it's sometimes hard to see any progress. And I think that's where a lot of people end up quitting, because they just don't think they can make a difference. So are you there, Lonnie?
I am, Jerome. Thanks for inviting me on today.
Yeah, thank you. It was on short notice, I know.
That's all right. I don't mind that. I can do short notice pretty easily. So, I actually have a lot of, obviously, my listeners know that I'm pretty well opinionated about this. I think that's the dynamics of the movement, of any change movement, is, the people have been programmed. This is why it's called activism, because we're activating other people to move out of their comfort zone. So that makes people angry. And then we have to go and recognize that there are paid anti-activists, right? There's people who are paid money. I think I read an article last year that said there are something like people that make like $35,000 a year to maintain 8 or 9 personas on the internet to counteract any activists in almost every industry. So that's why, pick an industry where there's activism going on. The chemical industry, the anti-nukers, they all, the gun advocates, they all have these people who are out there, and many of them are just automated bots to pick up certain words, and then they plug in certain key responses. It's not like people have to spend their, their time recreating the wheel all the day. So yes. We've kind of been automated ourselves into intimidating real people and real activists, you know, people who, I mean, when I look back on my involvement with the Post-Ignorance Project, you know, Kevin Blanche and I worked together for about 2 years, solidly, very solidly, 2.5 years. I flew him all around the country to do protests and things. People would say they were going to show up at least 4 or 5 times. There was 10 or 12 people that contacted us and said, yeah, we'll join you. We're going to be out there. And nobody, crickets, no one would. One time, Kevin ended up sleeping on a park bench in New York City because the guy who said he was going to show up and pick him up at the airport basically just left him standing.
Wow. You know?
So, I mean, Kevin could have called me, but he didn't want to keep demanding that I pay for him to go to a hotel. You know, this guy had arranged for him to stay at his house. And,
wow.
I mean, so he was like, he just didn't want to ask me, like, hey, I don't have a hotel room. Can you pay for a hotel room in New York City? So he's like, I'll just sleep on the fucking park bench. Excuse my language. You know what I mean? Like, he just said, whatever. So, but, you know, this is the nature of activism. I mean, when we think back about, like, one of the biggest activists that we can think about is Rosa Parks, right? Her act of defiance of stepping out and sitting on that park on the bus bench. But she wasn't the first person to do that. And that wasn't a spontaneous event. That was years and years of planning. One of the biggest stories of activism that really always sticks in my mind is the story of Madam C.J. Walker. Now, she was the very first self-made female millionaire in the United States. She was the first freed child of a set of slaves. And she basically discovered a product to make hair not fall out, because in those days, everybody washed their hair with lye. Well, black people in particular, their skin type was so sensitive that their hair just fell out in big blotches. That's why they often wore hats and had scarves on their head, because they had the big blotches on their head. So she discovered this tonic to make their hair. It was just basically coconut oil, a bunch of other stuff. She developed the program that Mary Kay and all these other network marketers basically copied from her of how to market this product. And she became a millionaire very rapidly within 4 or 5 years. Good. So in the movement of the Black March to stop the 5,000 to 6,000 lynchings that were happening in this country at the turn of the century last year, around 1910-11, there was a big, gigantic march on Washington. And all the Black people went to Washington, lots of them. There was like a million people that marched on Washington. It was huge. And the Black leaders, C.J. Dubois, Douglas, and Madam C.J. Walker was among the leaders, because by this time she was a millionaire. And, you know, interestingly enough, they kept her from meeting with the president because they didn't, as a female. And in fact, C.J. Dubois had specifically made a hand to make sure her name was erased in the newspapers and as a powerful, outspoken woman, because he thought women should keep their place. Now, that goes to show you that people that are on the same side for their own political reasons will hold each other back because they have their own moral authority, right? So we're sort of suffering from that, at least in the anti-nuke community. I mean, we've had really literally people turn on each other. People that I supported financially, emotionally, have turned on me and said malicious things about me on the YouTubes. And then other people that hate them make videos about me, about how horrible I am. I mean, it just builds up, right? That's how the hate machine works. But my thing is...
I just started to get into that.
Yeah, well, you know what? My solution is just block those people and ignore them, because haters will be haters. And we cannot pay attention to the hate. What if you focus on the negativity of other people? That's what's going. It's what you focus on. That's what's going to expand in our consciousness. So it's extremely important just to not even address them. I mean, not even say anything. Just move on. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. You can't feed into that, because we can't change them. What we can change is ourselves. And take right action when we know we have to take right action.
Yeah, I've only had to block a few comments on my channel. But it's only when somebody just gets maliciously just mean, downright mean, you know, that I have to block a comment. You know, people who may want to argue a point, I don't block the comment.
Right.
You know, I you know me well enough to know I enjoy a good, valid argument about this, whatever, to try to get to the truth of the situation. So, yeah, it seems like, indeed, as soon as I scraped the surface of climate change, they came out of the woodwork like roaches. all over my climate change
on videos. Both sides of the issue. Yeah, I get you. I mean, this is
because
the thing.
I went on both sides of the issue. I truly embrace both sides.
Right. Well, you know,
In one I looked like a denier, and in the other one I looked like an acknowledger.
Well, I've come to the conclusion it doesn't really matter what it is. The reality is we have a suffering planet, and my contention is we're not even acknowledging the root of it, which is really chemical and nuclear pollution. That's
right.
That is at the heart
nuclear
of what
most?
Yeah, probably nuclear mostly. If you look at what happened, I mean, they have there's a chart that you can look at to see the beginning of the sixth mass extinction started around 19. I think they tagged it at 1945.
Yep.
So, you know, what happened that year? Wouldn't know. You know, so, but really, this is kind of, I mean, this is why I really liked your show yesterday when you played that thing with Claudia and the way you, you know, you sort of led into this, because really, she spoke very eloquently, like, we are in shock over this is our reality. This is the hardcore reality. Like, we're on the air to try it in an effort to get people to not just wake up, but to take action and demand a change, demand a reality. It's like I was on Twitter this morning and I follow some pro-nuke site, and they may put up a chart comparing like how Canada has mostly clean energy because they're like 60% nuclear. And I wrote, you know, clean until it's not. Until the nuclear waste, there's no answers to the nuclear waste. That stuff is going to destroy our environment and our habitability on this planet.
Yeah.
So, but they will insist that it is clean.
No such thing as clean energy, period. I don't care how you look at it. Any energy, even if in the production of the actual energy itself, it's a clean process, entails a whole bunch of filthiness in the prelude to that process that builds up to it. A nuclear plant may not produce any carbon dioxide, really, but how much carbon dioxide went into creating the nuclear fuel and into the whole production and of the plant itself, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you know the meaning of the word entropy?
Same with solar. You know, you may think solar is totally green. Well, no, it isn't. You got to grow ingots of silicon in order to have effective solar cell technology. And to do that, you have to have very, very, very high temperature ovens. You know, and pure silicone. And there's a huge waste stream involved with that. And it's a silicon dioxide waste stream. And so we don't know what the effects of that are going to be. So there is no such thing as green energy or safe or clean energy. It is counter to the whole basic nature of the planet. Every species on the planet has its own energy or gets its energy from other species in a coexistence, except for us. So we must remember that, too, you know. In a way, it makes one want to lose hope. Well, that's the case, and what's the hope? You know, if we completely cut our carbon emissions to zero, for instance, would that make a significant impact on the future? We don't know. You know, at this point, I think that the nuclear poisoning is going to get everybody, and it's kind of like a, you know, I referred to it in a recent video as like a lot like graphite, you know? Have you ever messed with graphite, Lonnie?
Mm-mm. No, I have to say I have not.
Pencil lead, ground up pencil, super fine powder that gets everywhere. You open the tube of it and somehow it's over in that corner. You know, that kind of a substance, stuff that gets everywhere. That's why radiation just gets everywhere. And you can't contain it. You cannot contain it. It gets out. That's the nature of the beast. So it is going to get out, and it will spread out, and it will even out, and everybody will get their fair share. And I don't think humanity really understands that. I don't think that humanity gets it. We're easily scared about global warming, but in the next 100 years, you know, that it'll take to kill us off from global warming, we're going to have way worse issues at the Hanford site, at Fukushima, at Chernobyl even. You don't think that's over. Don't think that's less radioactive. It's sitting under a big ball of concrete, but yeah, that's it. You know, and then that didn't even work. They had to build that new building over the top of that. So Fukushima, the same thing. You know, the radiation levels there are still rising.
Yeah, and people, they're coercing people to live back in it.
Now at the base of the reactor containment vessel, and in the foundation of the reactor building, they're finding 45 sieverts per hour of radiation. That's a lethal dose. 45 sieverts an hour is huge. They were finding 500 sieverts an hour. Wow. Right at the pedestal where the reactor was sitting. So they're years and years and years and years away from being able to get close enough to that to even look at it. They can get a camera and a stick, but you're never going to use that camera again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, and now it's high-level nuclear waste. And everything they stick in that hole is high-level nuclear waste. And so there is another. See how it's getting out? It gets out. It gets everywhere. It gets on the equipment. And the equipment, what are you going to do with that?
Well, not only that, it's escaping into the atmosphere and into the water. And, I mean, the IAEA basically recently told them that they should just dump their water into the Pacific.
Kilometers away, they're finding particles of fuel, micro-sized particles of fuel.
Of course.
So they're like, well, you know, maybe this is worse than we thought it was. Yeah, you think?
They know. I mean, to be honest, we're living in a state of entropy. I mean, do you know what entropy means? I mean, it's
along without any change in momentum or direction.
What?
Entropy is going along without any change in momentum or direction, just in the same basic direction.
No, it's a decline into chaos, essentially. That's what entropy is. It's a decline. Okay. I mean, that's where we're at. We're in a state of entropy. It's basically, it's a degradation, a process of degradation that trends down into disorder, basically. And in the scientific world, it's about the thermodynamic system that usually brings the system into chaos, the disorder, a degree of disorder or uncertainty in a system. And that is kind of a natural function of everything, right, is the entropy. Like, we have our waste products and they dissolve into chaos, but they end up in the natural order of things that entropy creates nutrients that brings positive things to being able to sustain life. But the original life degrades and gets into chaos and can't sustain itself, right? That's kind of the short and quick version of it all. But that's kind of where we're at. Like, we are in a huge state of entropy. Everything is dissolving into the chaotic state. And I actually think that human beings are suffering from the nuclear pollution, from mental illness. Like, people are just confused. They really don't know what's right, what's truth, what's not truth. And if you take action, I mean, at least in the United States, since 9/11, since they brought in the Unpatriot Act, you can't go to any time. I mean, Steve Mnuchin was out at UCLA talking, and students were like protesting him. They got arrested for protesting the Secretary of the Treasury. They got arrested for speaking out against him.
Yep.
I mean, that's an outrage in my view. And these are small. Now, they were arrested for disorderly conduct because you're not supposed to say bad things and call these people out on their, you know, financial crimes. Like, Ben Carson, the Department of HUD, right? This is the hilarious story of the week. This is funny. The man who runs the housing department that helps out the poor people in our country refurbished his office to the tune of like $115,000. He's paid $30,000 for a table for his office. Now,
well, I hope at least it was made with slave labor.
Yeah, no doubt it was, man. No doubt it was.
From some endangered Amazon tree.
I mean, I read an article this morning in Financial Times that says, well, it's time to roll back the Dodd-Frank regulations on the banks. We need to ease up on the banks. And I tweeted back, I'm like, well, why don't you just start issuing slave notes on people so we can sell our kids? Because, you know, I mean...
Well, how much of you and my taxpayer dollars went to the banks to bail them out after 2001?
Well, how much are going to the banks right now? We just gave them a big, gigantic, fat tax break. Gigantic tax break. You know, people are saying, well, at least my income taxes went down. Well, wait till the cost of living and everything else goes skyrockets, right? Wait until you can't
afford, you understand the tax thing.
I mean, this actually, to be honest, there was a really good comparison. This tax program was almost identical to the same tax program they passed in 1926 that took effect in 27. And you know what happened in 29? That's exactly what we're going to see, the biggest crash in the world. You know, and it is, I mean, the nature of our Constitution and the nature of our country is right now being tested. And I am frankly outraged that there's still people out there saying that Trump is finally taking on the deep state and he's finally going to drain the swamp and he's going after him. And that's why we're having this Russia investigation. To me, that is exactly like people defending Hitler during World War II and the things that he did. I mean, it is the same mentality because this is utter pure corruption. Pinochet 2.0. This guy is doing everything he can to undermine the establishment of democracy in our government. Everything. He has no regard for the law. None. Zero. And that's evident by the number of people within his administration who have pled guilty to crimes, to literally crimes. Mike Flynn, his national security advisor, was an agent of a foreign state. I mean, it is beyond comprehension that people can defend him as a... You know, yesterday he gave a really good show on the television about the gun rights. He was on camera for about 2 hours talking tough about how he's going to... We're going to pass something. We're going to get sane regulations. Bump stocks are going to be gone. We're going to do something about it. Just wait. I mean... It's the same. This is where we get discouraged because we see this over and over and over again. I mean, do you know who Cynthia McKinney is?
Yeah.
So Cynthia McKinney was basically railroaded out of Congress, literally railroaded out of Congress. She ran for the Green Party and she now lives in another country because the harassment. And so, you know, when we talk about activism, I mean, you and I are small beans, you know. We twist our hands because people like Tom Carpenter won't make time for us to come and interview with us. You know, Tom Carpenter from Hanford Challenge doesn't respond to our phone calls. The establishment anti-nuke people, they don't want to talk to us because we're too alternative. They don't know what we're going to say. We don't go along with the program, right? So we may or may not agree with them.
A safe level of nuclear poisoning, for instance.
Well, I don't think they believe there's a safe level of nuclear poisoning, but they don't want us to say radical things like, you know, we need to shut down all the nuke plants right now instead of, oh, well, we'll cooperate and, you know, we need to have verifiable proof. I mean, for me, this whole argument that people have to twist like pretzels going into court, like Chris Busby, you know, he treads lightly. Helen Caldicott, they tread lightly on what they say publicly. Because if they say the wrong thing, when they go into court, they'll be discredited as an expert. So they can't make statements that are not 100% based on science, and yet science is not actually testing anything. Christopher Busby discovered that the primary testing after World War II about the Japanese nuclear victims, basically, they destroyed the science there. They threw out the control group when they showed that the rates, when they compared the radiation levels between the control group who had no exposure and the people who were bombed at Hiroshima, when they showed that the control group had no negative effects. There was no exposure. So what they did was they just threw out the control group and then compared the people who had been exposed to discern their rates of radiation. And they threw out any tests on women and any tests on children. They only tested men who were of good health,
or who were 28 in the Army.
Years old. Yeah. So this type of thinking, and it's not just the nuclear industry. It's every major technological industry that is worth billions of dollars. I mean, the money god is real. And that's what you and I encounter, and every activist encounters, is the money god. Because they pay for people to harass us.
Yeah. So I know that as soon as I start hitting a hot button and I start getting hateful comments, like on my YouTube videos, I know that I must be heading in the right direction.
Pretty much. I mean, I'll be honest, I have pretty much stopped being on YouTube because of the hate machine. I just like, you know what? Is it worth it to me to have to expose myself, to speak up? I mean, I was reading nuclear articles on my YouTube channel and giving some commentary here and there. And I mean, it was almost like a little part-time job during the day going over on my YouTube account deleting the mean comments. So,
yeah.
And then you see the net result of very few people actually get off their rear ends and do anything. You know what I mean? Like they really, they honestly just, it is such a, and I've come to understand that the reason they don't is because they're overwhelmed. Because they, I think fundamentally people who are aware know that this planet is on a death cycle. I mean, we are, the humans of this culture have destroyed our capacity to maintain life on the planet. I don't disagree with Guy McPherson that we will not have humanity on this planet in 100 years. I think that we are going to have
I know that in 100 years, things could get very dicey.
Yeah, that's
good. If we even got a 2-foot level in sea rise.
Right,
because of a magnificent warming event or something like that. If we had a big, huge cloud of methane get released from the Arctic by some miracle, and that floated around and raised the entire global temperature by 0.6 of a degree in a decade, then that could trigger a huge, huge ice melt, which could raise sea levels. You know, and my first thing would be, well, San Onofre is literally storing long-term waste without a solution.
San Onofre, Diablo Canyon.
Right on the coast.
Oyster Creek, Indian Point. There are all around the coastlines, there are nuclear power facilities because they need big masses of water. And frankly, that idea about some miracle where the methane is going to... Methane is going... There's 800 gigatons they've discovered off the coast of Russia.
And huge amounts.
You know, they have these big blowholes all along the coast, and that's the methane escaping. It is not, I mean, scientists have said when the Arctic goes without ice during the summer, which is probably going to happen this summer, within several years, that methane will be escaping. It's kind of like the big earthquake off the Cascadia Fault Zone, right? They know it's coming. They can't predict when. But they know it's coming. And when the Cascadia earthquake happens, bye-bye Hanford, bye-bye Northern Hemisphere. And that is the reality, because if Hanford blows up, Hanford has plutonium, massive amounts of plutonium. I actually saw an article this morning that I do plan on reading on my YouTube channel about how plutonium pretends in your body that it is, what did it say? It was protein. Your body, I think that's what it said. Your body reacts to it. And so it is actually super detrimental, and it is highly toxic. We cannot take even 1/32nd of a thousandth of a gram. I mean, we are seriously, seriously very, very sensitive to this. And so are all the other little creatures on the planet, right? So... we have basically silently, I mean, without knowing it, we have allowed the technologists to basically give the planet a death sentence.
That, in essence, is true. Now, if as the human race, we all got together and we had the desire and said, okay, that's it, no more nuclear, and we have to clean it all up now. I don't care how much it costs. If we've got $2 billion for war, we got $2 billion to clean up the Hanford site. We're going to have a huge national, international effort to clean up all these sites and encapsulate this stuff somehow, somewhere on the planet, get it all put away, and pray to God we never think of that stupid idea again. You know, with the exception of certain radio things such as medical imaging, the world without X-rays. Imagine that. You know, the world, it was the world without a CAT scan. You know, imagine that. So there are places in our lives for this, but you know, in MRI now, they've got magnetic resonance, so they're getting to the point where they can move away from X-ray radiation, but still, we need X-rays. You know, imagine going to the dentist.
We're told we need X-rays. I mean, they're...
Well, imagine going to the dentist, and he goes, well, yeah, okay, that two-thirds, I guess I could pull it. I can't X-ray it. I can't even see if it has a cavity. What, do I have to exploratory drill?
Yeah, but you know what? That is excluding. I mean, we have laser technology where I'm sure that they could laser your mouth, right? So we're relying on old, old technology. We have advanced since they discovered the radiation. I think that the reason we keep radioactivity in our commonplace is for the nuclear industry, for the war machine, because the war profiteers want nuclear. Because it's the best weapon they've ever discovered, because it is the most dangerous thing they've ever discovered. And by the way, that thing that I was talking about with plutonium, it basically said plutonium acts like a Trojan horse, duping a special membrane protein that is typically responsible for taking up iron. So that's what happens. But, I mean, this is the thing. This is where it gets down to it for me, is taking right action. We have a small, short life. If we live to be full adults, we might live to be 100 years old, right? Yeah. In that 50 years, our responsibility to the universe is to love each other, to do the best we can, to help promote healthy living lifestyles, to reject greed and avarice and immorality. And I'm not talking about who you sleep with, but I mean, it's immoral to make money off the backs of other people who are suffering. I mean, I personally have been an insurance protester in the United States since my 30s, and I'm 62, because I refuse to pay for health care for profit. I think it's completely immoral. I don't go into Walmart because I think they're immoral. I mean, there's things that I don't go to a Starbucks unless someone drags me in there. You know, a client will drag me in there, but I, you know, because they're destroying the rainforest. If we make small right actions in our own lives, like, you know, there was a video that was circulating on Facebook yesterday. I think we're dumping like 1 million tons of garbage, something like 3 garbage trucks. They're just being dumped into the Pacific Ocean every hour. It's an incredible amount of waste we're just dumping into the Pacific Ocean. I mean, yeah. And into all the oceans, right?
There's there is an entire huge continent of plastic trash in the middle, right, of the ocean.
They call it Trashlandia. The United Nations named it. I mean, that's outrageous. But this is the thing. If we refuse to buy products that contain plastics as much as possible, it's really almost impossible in our culture to not buy plastics. It virtually is. You buy a jar that's recyclable, but it's got plastic wrap around it for sealing, right, for safety, right? Quote, safety. I mean, that's the ironic part. We seal it up to prove it's safe to take, but that little bit of plastic is really part of our demise, because that plastic, and it's all made up from oil. Plastic is oil.
Right.
And that's my oil objection to eating chemicals in our food. Like, people say, well, you can't get around eating. Yes, you can get around eating chemicals in your food. I literally, you can, because the chemicals that you're putting, one of my pet peeves actually is coffee creamer. That stuff is just oil byproducts.
That's delicious.
It's disgusting. It's delicious because you've been acclimated. Because you've been acclimated to think it's good. For me, I think it's revolting. I haven't eaten it in probably 20 years. When I discovered what it is, it's literally oil pellets. It's literally you're drinking oil. It's disgusting. It's byproducts. So, you know, these are things that on a personal basis, if everybody made a commitment to it, it's not the big picture. Yeah, we can go out and protest, but as we've seen every time, like nothing really happens when people protest except the army comes out and shoots people and they arrest people, you know?
Yeah, it seems like it.
But in the meantime...
There's more than one way to protest, though, as you were saying.
Yes, and with our dollars...
There's really a whole show in that. Well, how can we protest? What are the things we as individuals can do that we can do by ourselves that aren't too hard?
Well, forget not being too hard. Just do it.
Together.
You know, like I think financially, you can do things. Your dollar speaks. Don't purchase certain items. Don't support certain stores. Don't just make an effort to clean up your own life. Eliminate chemicals from your own life as much as possible. Live a life where you make an effort not to buy products. I know myself, if I buy a product that I bring home that's in a plastic container, I put it into a jar. I don't leave it in a plastic container because those plastic containers deteriorate. I'm not about to start putting oil products into my body. It's bad enough they use them. I make an effort not to buy products made in a plastic container. I mean, seriously. And if it means that I buy less or I have to do things less, then I make that decision.
That's being ethical with your own principles. I love that. I love that about you.
Well, I think
so. You know what we should do, Lonnie? We should start a website talking about ways to protest and companies to fight against and people to fight against and all of that. What do you think of that idea?
That's a good idea. I mean, there are probably several of them out there. There's lots of those like that, you know, we could link into. I know of several of them that you can. I mean, do you know who Gary Null is?
No.
Gary Null is a natural health practitioner who has his own website. He's cured many, 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 many people of diseases that they say are non-curable and life-threatening. And strictly, he's just done it through getting people to correct their lifestyles, essentially. Like me, I got cured of arthritis when I corrected my lifestyle, when I eliminated basically toxins and plastics from my body, you know, and when I stopped being so self-critical, because arthritis is directly related on a metaphysical level to extreme self-criticism. So there's a lot of interesting things that, you know, I think it's very interesting that in the late 2000s, when the self-help industry was really huge, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, all these people, Gary Null, they were all leading humanity out of the abyss of the hyper-technology that we had been in of, you know, it's whatever it does, feel good, so just go do it without regard to the future, right? So
right.
I think it's interesting that that industry, that self-help industry, has basically been demeaned to the point where if you start talking about doing anything self-help, they're like, oh, yeah, Oprah Winfrey, right? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, it is an interesting thing that we are, and in America in particular, because in America we are captors. The good thing about living in Europe is you have all these different cultures and countries living next to each other. So they have a level of knowledge that things are different in other countries. In our country, we think it's all the same because we have this big, expansive nation and we really have a captured media. We don't have free radio. We don't have free television. People only hear when we call it mainstream media, it's mainstream because that's all we got. Right?
Are we on the radio right now?
Yes, but you know how few
people hear
us.
The actual public radio over the air?
KEPW is carrying us. And that's people wonderful.
Hello, KEPW.
And people on TuneIn Radio can find us. So if they go to UCY TV on TuneIn Radio, they will hear. I mean, that's the value. This is why I love this radio station, to be honest, because this radio station, I don't agree with a lot of the people that I listen to on this station. In fact, some of them I really disagree with. But what I love is that these are all thoughtful people who are yes. presenting ideas that make us think and look at things in a different way. And they're not afraid to say what they really think. Right? So
yes.
in order for us to actually move and grow, we have to allow the differences. I mean,
we have some shows on this radio network that are excellent. Nuclear Hot Seat, one of my favorite shows of all time.
Me too.
You know, Libby is so incredibly awesome and talented at putting together a show, too.
Well, she brings action. It's not just like right now, this is somewhat of an opinion show, right? So we have several opinion shows on this station. They're opinion shows. There's people's opinions. But Libby makes an effort to actually go out and get people who, and interestingly enough, the people that she interviews won't respond to my emails and calls because I'm not establishment enough. It's kind of interesting, but that's okay. I mean, honestly, I came to these terms a long time ago. It takes all kinds. It does not matter because movement is movement. We're headed forward. And the reality is, I keep going back to this, but the Cascadia Fault Zone, that is going to change the world when that earthquake happens. That is going to change everything because of the proximity of Hanford. Because there's an active nuclear plant within 15 miles of Hanford that if it gets into an earthquake greater than 6.0 and actually 4.0, but after Fukushima, they miraculously said it could withstand a 6.0 earthquake. If we have a 7.0 earthquake up on the Cascadia Fault Zone, the Columbia Generating Station will have a nuclear meltdown. And that nuclear meltdown will prevent anyone from going to the Hanford tanks, which need 24-hour care and maintenance. And within 72 hours, Hanford will blow up. So that's the reality. This is why, like,
are people. Are they storing plutonium at Hanford?
Yes. They had one of the largest plutonium plants. They had four plutonium plants right on the Columbia River.
They had plutonium plants there, but I thought they were taking that whole thing apart and putting it away. And they were putting the plutonium somewhere else.
Yeah, somewhere else on the Hanford Reservation. I mean, it is actually just a big lie. Everything they do out there is a big lie. They do not safely store things. The people that are working there are being contaminated. The town of Richland, the childhood birth defect rate in that area is off the charts. Children are born on a regular basis with microcephaly, and yet the midwives up there refuse to say it's caused by Hanford. So, you know, we can deny the emperor has no clothes, but at some point, it's, you know, and this is kind of the point. My daughters and I talk about this. Like, all this information I've discovered, I mean, I was living blissfully before Fukushima. I had no idea.
So was I.
You know, like we had no idea. So is it better to know and be prepared, or is it better to live, you know, without acknowledging it and pretending? I honestly don't think one way or the other really matters because it's going to happen. And that's, for me, why it takes right action. Why, okay, my little tiny protest, one person never having gone into Walmart in probably 10 years. Does that matter in the long, big picture? They're still a megalithic corporation. People still go there because they say they can get cheap things. You know what
there
I mean?
Go.
But then again, I shop on Amazon. So
that's what I'm starting to do a lot, but only because there's literally no place else to shop.
I mean, you know what? This is the thing. That's exactly where we're all sort of, this is why we've all been backdoored in. We've been sort of coerced. Like, you know, we feel bad about the people being coerced into living about in Fukushima, but essentially we're all Fukushima victims. We're all the victims of these megalithic technologies, the nuclear, what they call themselves, the nuclear priesthood. I mean, they have abdicated their role to protect our planet, not just humanity. So in the meantime, we have short little lives. So what are we going to do? I suggest taking right action. And I also think that Guy McPherson was right. The only thing that matters is love. When it comes down to it, love is the only thing that really matters.
Love is all you need.
And love is. And the thing is, about these solutions, I had Chuck Hyman on here talking about the microbes. If everybody poured microbes on their backyard, composted their food, we might be able to contend with the nuclear radiation and the contaminants that are in the world, but we need it everywhere. Like, we're not going to just, do one little 10-mile acre or even 500 hectares. I mean, even if we just did a huge swath of land, like, let's say, the size of Kansas, that still wouldn't resolve the issue. We need a unified voice, and,
we need a war on nuclear.
Yeah, well, I think there is a war on nuclear. Nuclear eats itself off, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just, the chemicals that go involved with nuclear, that's the other thing, is the chemical contamination. And, right. And frankly, we're not even being told
about
all the contaminants.
At Hanford today.
Yep. Yeah,
and how they're losing level, and they're like, "Well, it's probably evaporation,
right?
Probably." And,
right.
They had pictures of the inside of the tank, that the one in question that's leaking, and it's just so ugly, the look of that chemical waste left over from the processing of uranium and plutonium is just hideous. It's hideous. It's like this yellow, crusty, icy, kind of salty looking. Ooh, it's just ugly. And it forms a solid layer on top. And so it stratifies the waste does. So it's not pumpable.
Right. That's right.
So it's a sludge, but it's not pumpable because it stratifies. You got to literally break the whole thing up and let it settle again. And then you can pump it. But yeah, good luck with that.
Look, we're suffering from the Manhattan Project, for real. And what they really wanted, remember the old movie, The Stepford Wives?
Yeah.
That's their ideal. They want us all to be Stepford Wives. And that's why I like this idea about being an activist. We're not stepping in. We have stepped out of the norm. I used to say, I'm not an activist. I'm an American. This is my duty. I feel like I am compelled to at least warn people. Like, honestly, the fact that anybody ingests dairy creamer, that instant dairy creamer, is, you want to make yourself sick, consume that kind of food. You will be sick. You will get arthritis. You will have high blood pressure. You will have kidney problems, aches and pains. You will, these are things, this is one of the things I learned from Gary Nall very strongly. I mean, these things are directly attributable to these so-called common ills. I mean, humans didn't have these common ills 200 years ago. Cancer was unheard of. Arthritis was like for the very old and decrepit. And frankly, people didn't eat that often. I mean, it was, they ate once a day, twice a day, maybe. And humans have thrived. I mean, it's beyond comprehension, the megalithic lies, the Disney lies that we believe to be our reality. And I think it's time for adults to grow up and not be afraid. Like, when I say put your courage feet on, I mean it. Like, we do not have to live in fear. And because things are grave doesn't mean we can't enjoy our life. There's a lot to enjoy, and there's a lot of joy in our lives every day.
Mm-hmm.
And all we have to do is acknowledge it. And what you focus on expands. It doesn't mean you have to deny acknowledging the harm that they're doing to us and not work towards right action. But there is a lot of benefit towards believing that life is worth living. And that, we make one tiny small difference. Every drop in the cup fills it.
Yeah, and only one, and another an interesting analogy is that only one drop of something another color will make the whole color of the cup change.
Well, that's kind of what's happened in our country right now. One drop of 9/11 turned the whole color of the country. I mean, people just clicked their heels and said Sieg Heil and passed an Unpatriot Act.
It's amazing to me that is a thing.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing
George
to me.
George Bush was evil now. Okay.
Well, not just George Bush. He's part of the whole Bush crime family. I mean, there's a really great book that you can read called The Family of Secrets by Russ Baker that talks about their history. You know, that whole thing, that was part of their plan. I mean, and I actually think that Traitor Trump is part of their plan, too. I don't think for a second he's fighting the deep state. I think he was installed to do exactly what he's doing, which is why the Republicans are not stopping him. Because he's obviously breaking the law in lots of ways. The nepotism is out of control. I mean, Jared Kushner's had a security clearance for over a year when they have known for over a year that he couldn't get a security clearance, and yet he's been allowed to hear the most top secret thing. The news came out that he went to China on American policy and closed a deal for his own private business. That's illegal. I mean, we actually have laws written about that. That's actually not legal. But the laws have been thrown out the window. And I think the reason that they're sort of willy-nilly, my opinion, is because they know things in the environment are so grave. They know that we have crossed the threshold. There is no going back. We are on the demise of civilization, period. Maybe 1,500 human beings will survive in 100 years from now. We might be able to scrape our way back.
That's one of those we'll have to wait and see things, I think.
yes, we will.
I'm not seeing enough evidence of actual die-off yet to say something like that.
Do you follow the die-off? Do you follow the massive die-offs? We're losing a million birds a month.
Oh, I know. I mean humans.
Well, humans are on the top of the reality is we do not keep track of our die-offs of humans. Hospitals do not keep track of the deaths of oncology rates. They don't keep track of it. I mean, we are losing humans at an unconscionable rate. Humans are starting to die off.
Because from my research, the human population is on a literal elbow-shaped, straight-up curve on this planet. We are doubling ourselves. Like every 5 years, there's double the people there were before on a global level.
Well, on a global level, that's because they keep the overpopulation. And the reason is that in the more poor countries where they're desperate, they don't have birth control or access to health care, and the people are not educated, so they don't know how to control it. So in the advanced civilizations, the birth rate is actually declining, right? This is why they have these mega wars. But, I mean, the pollution will take care of them, too. I mean, it's coming worldwide. I mean,
Start seeing an actual die-off, then, until then, I'm going to continue to fight against it because it's in the same realm of everything else that I'm fighting against, generally speaking. Does that make sense? The whole, there's just the whole thing. There's just the whole thing. And there's nuclear is involved with it, and environmental, and weather, and climate, and there are so many different things, and the unknown. Tomorrow, we could have 5 mega volcanoes go off somewhere on this planet, and spew gigatons of ash into the air, and overnight, the whole temperature on the planet drops by 3 degrees Celsius.
Just one. What they say when Mount Fuji goes, which it looks like it, that's another one. I mean, there's so many. I mean, this is the thing. This is the interesting thing. We're in this time in history where this information era, we have the information. We just don't know how to, protect ourselves. I mean, the mega rich have dug deep into the earth, I guess, They're going to be fine for 50, 60 years, which I think that they've probably done before. I mean, look at those, really intrinsic caves that are in Romania, right? It's been proposed that that's how people survived the last major catastrophe that was caused by humans. And I think we've been around this, you know, cycle again and again. And this is why, to me, it comes down to love. Because it doesn't really matter what we, you know, we're at the bottom of the food chain, basically, of the human spectrum. We don't have the power. We don't have the money. We don't have the mega bucks to, like, protect our families and dig underneath and, you know, to be able to project out for 100 years to protect our offspring. But right. Even that, does that matter? What really matters to me is spirit. Because you're not going to kill the spirit. I don't believe in the death. I don't think of death like Westerners do. I think our spirit, I think we will be able to transcend beyond it. And to me, love really is the only answer that there is. Love is the only thing that makes life worth living. And the more you open your heart and reject the negativity, like refuse, just shake it off, you know, just be like a duck and just shake it off. The more your own the more your own quality of life improves. And it doesn't really matter what the external forces are. Your spirit can be experiencing joy every day, every single day.
Agreed. 100% on that one.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind. One thing that Claudia mentioned yesterday is about racism and this race and that race, and they're using race as a tool to divide us. And even she is called a racist for just pointing that out, that racism is something that is created outside of actual people by organizations and governments for the most part. And they teach us to be racist and to not trust somebody just because of the color of their skin. I mean, she actually got livid and used the F word a couple times during that.
I know.
And I apologize, radio listeners, for that, if anybody was offended. But the bottom line is that she has a very valid point that we need to look at each other and each one as a human being and realize not only is there value and intrinsic value in just the life of a human being, but also that there is a cost involved with the life of a human being. Every single human being on the planet takes a toll on the environment. And that's just the facts. That's the nature. And so you've got to account in for every single human being. And until you do, and acknowledge every human being, and until you do that, then you're just dividing them up. And then the big problems get swept under the rugs, under the division and hatred, which is sown that way.
Well, there's huge, there's sociologists who have written books on this topic and shown how through history, how race, the idea, the concept of race was created to make power, to create power. So right. This idea, the concept of racism is really a sociological power play. And yes. I mean, humans are waking up to this idea because we are getting to the point where the environment is collapsing around us to the point where it makes it look ridiculous. This is why we get livid. This is why we start spitting nails because we're like, you know, life is too short for this stuff. And the fact is we've got to, you know, rally the troops and get on the right side of the fence to stop the few, maybe thousand people that are intent on destroying the rest of us billions on this planet. I mean, there's not, exactly. She was correct. There are not very many people in that type of ultimate power, but they have ultimate power. Hey, Jerome, guess what? We're at 8:58.
Yep,
so we've got 30 seconds left. We've got 30 seconds. I really want to thank you for inviting me on. You know, tomorrow, yeah, maybe we can, if you have time, maybe you can join me. I'm going to be doing this show tomorrow for Barry. Maybe we can continue this conversation and open the phone lines up to callers if they want to call in tomorrow.
I would like that very, very much.
So let's plan that. And so, listeners, you're warned here.
Tomorrow at 8 o'clock Pacific, then.
Yes, we will. And I encourage everyone to put your courage feet on. And remember, love it really is the only thing that matters.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. We'll talk to you tomorrow, you guys.
Bye now.
Bye, Jerome.